and welcome to another episode of Downtime with Cranston Public Library. We're a podcast for cool people who love libraries, where we talk about what we've been reading, what we've been watching, and what we've been loving. I'm your host, Taylor, and the branch librarian at the Oaklawn Branch Library, and my pronouns are she, her.
My name is Deb Aoki. My pronouns are she, her. I am, I guess, what people would call a manga journalist. I write about manga mostly for Publishers Weekly, Comics Beat, and also for Mangasplaining. I also write a few articles for that. But I'm also the editor for some of our Mangasplaining extra titles that are coming out. One is Wandering Cat's Cage, which is by Akane Torikai. It's kind of a Asian slant on Handmaid's Tale, if that's the simplest way I can describe it. It's currently serialized on Mangasplaining Extra, and it'll be coming out in print in the winter from Fantagraphics in print as a single omnibus volume. I'm also an editor on another upcoming Mangasplaining Extra title that we're publishing with Udon. It's called No Roses Without Thorns, an assistant's dispatch from the front lines of 1970s shoujo manga. This is by Nami Sasso, and Nami Sasso basically worked as an assistant to a lot of top shoujo manga creators in the 1970s, including Shusu Mizue, who does Glass Mask. So she's barely out of high school, and she was working as an assistant to shoujo manga creators. So it's going to be a really great insight into the world of shoujo manga, especially in the 70s, which was a really, really important time for the development of shoujo manga.
And hi, I'm Christopher Woodrow Butcher. I am with Deb, one of the co-hosts of Mangasplaining Podcast. Happy to be here today. I'm also the project manager at Mangasplaining Extra, which is the publisher we're doing. We're publishing, our first book was Okinawa, which came out. And we just found out actually a couple weeks ago that it was picked as one of the top 10 books for ALA's adult graphic novels list. So we're really excited about that. Okinawa by Susumu Higa. It is now available from Fantagraphics, wherever books are sold or digitally distributed. It's pretty great. It's our first book out of the gate, and we're really proud of it. Our second book I'm going to be editing is called Search and Destroy, and it's a take on a Tezuka story called Dororo, Osamu Tezuka story, like one of the classics of manga, by a contemporary creator named Atsushi Kaneko. And it's about someone whose parent, let's say, sells their body parts off to robots so that they can have human body parts. And she gets really mad about it and hunts them down and takes her body back. So there's a lot of metaphor there about bodily autonomy that I think that people are really going to dig. A cool SF setting in the far future, and sort of taking this Tezuka story and making it like very, very post-Cold War contemporary, very interesting. So yeah, in addition to that, I also, you know, write, and we do consulting in the manga industry for various publishers. And yeah, we're just we're manga'd up over here. It's not just the podcast. we're always manga-ing 24 hours a day, it feels like, dreaming in manga. But yeah, it's nice to be here. Thanks, Taylor.
Thank you. So a little bit later in the show, we'll talk more about Mangasplaining the show, and also just more about kind of manga for the beginners, manga for the uninitiated, me being somewhat one of them. But before we get into that, let's start off as we always do with, what have you been reading?
Mostly manga on my end, actually.
Okay.
But mostly manga for the podcast. We're just putting up the last couple episodes of our fourth season, like 112, 113. Actually, when this episode goes live, we will have put up our first interview with a librarian as one of our bonus episodes. And we got to talk to Robin Brenner at ALA, where we met a new president of the Graphic Novels Roundtable, and talked about the importance of manga in libraries. So that episode is up. That's like the current episode of Mangasplaining when this goes up, mangasplaining.com or wherever you get your podcasts. So that's pretty fun. But mostly we've been reading stuff for the new season. We read a book called Manga Manga by Frederick Schott, which is our first prose. And it's a history of manga that's really accurate up until about 1986. And then after that, everything goes off the rails in the world and in Japan because of the economic bubble bursting. But really fascinating history of manga. And we made Chip read that, which is fun because, you know, he doesn't have time to read books. He's writing Batman in his spare time and Daredevil and more Batman and Public Domain. He's a busy writer. But we had a fun time with that. And we also just read Guardians of the Louvre, which is a book in a series of books. I don't know if most people know this. These are published by NBM, mostly in English. It's a smaller graphic novel publisher, but they've been around for like 30 years. And they've been doing a series of books that are co-presented in France by the Louvre Museum. They commission these books. They commission like the top artists in the world to do graphic novels set in or about the Louvre Museum in Paris. And so there's several manga ones. We read Guardians of the Louvre by Jiro Taniguchi. And yeah, that's an interesting series. And that actually set me down a rabbit hole to see what else was available in English. So I was buying a bunch of other fun books. And on the prose front, I actually found out that the writer and illustrator Florent Chavouet is here in Taiwan right now where I'm living. And he did a book called Tokyo on Foot, which is like a guide to Tokyo, but as an illustrator who's drawing like storefronts and shopping spaces and showing you. So he's in Taiwan. I'm going to go try and meet him at like an event next week, which is pretty exciting. He's down in Tainan. So I've been rereading that as I read it years ago, because it's like such a foundational work for people who are really into Tokyo and manga and travel and illustrating. And the last book I bought is Patrick Macias, who's a friend of Deb's and ours. He's like a contemporary journalist. He's been writing about Tokyo and culture and manga and film and fashion for like, again, I'm probably not allowed to say how many years, but quite a few years. He's got a new book called Mondo Tokyo, Dispatches from Secret Japan. And it's basically everything from basically the first year that I went to Japan, which was 2007. I think it's from 2005 until 2024. Just like how fashion has changed, how popular culture in Japan has changed. It's really cool. I just read the intro. It's really, really good. Oh, and I read I'm reading Matt Alt's book still. Pure Invention, Inventions that from Japan that changed the world, which is, I picked it up again because unfortunately one of the people he interviewed in the book, the guy who invented karaoke, just passed away this week, which is super sad. But he did one of the biggest last interviews with this gentleman. And so I've been reading that, and that's actually really good. Again, people sort of ask us when we do the podcast, like, how do you guys know so much about manga? More Deb than me. But really, it's just reading not just the manga, but all the stuff around the manga and the culture and being able to like kind of figure out to the best of our knowledge where it all comes from. And then, you know, giving that back to Chip on the podcast. David's pretty good too. But Deb, what have you been reading?
Well, quite a bit. You know, like we've been doing manga a lot, but then I'm also, there's an emerging and underappreciated Chinese comic scene.
Yeah, absolutely.
As what, Taiwan, Hong Kong, Indonesia, Singapore, all that, right? Not to mention, I'm starting to get more into webtoons, so I'm reading a bunch of that.
Which are mostly coming from Korea for our uninitiated listeners.
So there's webtoon that is the generic term, and then there's webtoon with a capital W, which is the company. But there are several companies that, you know, publish, you know, vertical scrolling comics, and not just Korean too, right? There's a lot more Japanese. One I've been reading and watching is The Uncanny Counter, which is on Netflix. And Yen Ice Press is publishing the first volume of the webtoon in book format, I think this month. It's really fun. It's about it's about a boy who, I guess he's been bullied. He's limping. His leg has been injured, and his parents died in an accident a long time ago. He's been dealing with a lot. And then he somehow joins this group of people who are basically grim reapers. They are people who go out into the world and they try to find these evil spirits who are killing other people because they're eating other people's souls. It's really fun, and it's fun to read both the webtoon version and watch the TV. I've been doing both interchangeably. I've been reading the webtoon chapter and I watch the TV show up to the point where I've read and so on. And it's really great. The story is really engaging and fun. I think another one I'm reading Akane Banashi, which is about Rakugo.
Oh, yeah.
That one's a Shonen Jump series about a young girl whose her father was a Rakugo storyteller, which is like a combination between a storyteller and a stand-up comedian. They get up on stage with just a fan, and they take down different voices and they tell these traditional stories. So she's her father gets expelled from the school of Rakugo he's in. So she kind of takes it upon herself when she's a young girl to become a Rakugo storyteller herself. So the art's really great. And it really signifies one of the things I love about manga, which is it makes you care about something you never thought you would ever care about, much less know about. So now I know so much more about Rakugo. Like, one of the places where I like to stay in Japan is in Shinjuku. And I discovered it is 3 blocks away from a big Rakugo storyteller place. I still don't think I could go in because, you know, it's all in Japanese. But it was so amazing because it gave me another perspective on Japan that I didn't have before. And the storytelling is so compelling. It makes you care. You know, I mean, if it was just like a book about what Rakugo is, it would be pretty dull. But it brings in emotions and characters and growth and change and humor. What I love most about manga, it introduces me to so many things. It's not just about like who can beat who and who's stronger than who and, you know, what powers do they have? It opens so much of a world to me, and I love it.
I agree with that. Yeah.
You saying about these different mangas allowing you to learn about things that you never thought you would be interested about actually kind of lends very well into what I've been reading. So I just finished Bun, which is a Western comic done by I'm going to say her name wrong, even if I did remember, and I feel bad that I don't remember, but the author who did Check Please, which I loved. And that was another thing. It was like, I didn't really know much about hockey. I'm not a hockey person. I'm not generally not a big sports person to begin with, but Check Please, it just was like such a lovely group of characters, and all of them were very different and interesting. And this ensemble cast that you really grew attached to and really started to root for. And there's definitely like a lot of that in Bunt too. You can definitely see kind of, I don't want to say that it's formulaic in a bad way, but like a similar kind of formula to Check Please of like, here is a team and with a cast of characters that you start to root for. This team is particularly really underdogs because the premise is that the main character lost her financial aid to go to an art school in her hometown. It was like her dream school. She always wanted to go there. They had like this big full ride scholarship that she was awarded. And then they were like, oh, actually the funding stream for that scholarship doesn't exist anymore. We're so sorry for this error. Here's how much you owe us.
Yikes.
So she starts looking through all of the different like scholarships and financial aid for the school, and finds this kind of like loophole that they didn't close up, which is if you are a like full-time student athlete, but part of like a team that competes against other teams in the conference, and you win one game, then you can be awarded an athletic scholarship. So she sets out to start a softball team because she played softball in high school and she was quite good, but it's an art school full of eccentric art students. So it's like her trying to find people who would be willing to play on a softball team, but also like get them good enough to win one game so that they can all get school paid for. So it kind of feels, again, like not to be reductive, but it feels like the lesbian softball version of Check Please. So if you enjoyed Check Please, but you were like, wow, I wish there were more lesbians and softball, then go read Bunt, because it was a good time.
I loved Check Please. It's Ngozi Okazu. Such a talented creator. I've been following Check Please since it came out as a webcomic. Like, absolutely love it. And I'm so happy to hear they've got a new book. That's great. I'm in Taiwan, so I'm kind of missing some of the new American comics releases. I'm so focused on manga and manhwa and stuff like that these days. So yeah, that's awesome.
I believe she is just the writer for this one. There's another artist, which unfortunately I also don't have. It will be in the show notes. That's a notorious theme on this show, is that I don't always remember, but I always come with my sources in the show notes.
Relatable. We do that too.
Oh, Mad Rupert's doing it. Yeah, they're great illustrator as well. Yeah, this looks like a great book.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. But yeah, but going back to it's like I not really a sports person. I don't really know much about softball, but now I know some more about it from reading that.
It's funny. None of us really like sports comics except David, who's really into basketball comics for the most part. But we did the episode. We did a baseball episode as well on a book called Cross Game, and we all just loved it. Like, I actually picked a hockey book for the third book of our season this year, and Chip's like, I effing hate hockey. I can't believe you're making me read this. Like, he was so upset.
As a Canadian, he's saying this, by the way.
As a Canadian, he was talking. But we did the baseball book. We did Cross Game, and by Adachi, Mitsuru Adachi. And we all were just like, oh, the subject. You can learn about the subject through this book, but if the comic is good, the storytelling is good, if it pulls you into its world, the subject is like a nice little bonus. It's the craft. It's, you know, reading something from someone who can really just, you know, lay the words down on the paper. It's nice when you care about the words too, but sometimes it's just the sheer joy of reading, you know, that's actually, or reading comics or reading art or experiencing art is a big part of it.
I have a hard time imagining people not enjoying comics, honestly. So sometimes that's...
Isn't it weird?
It's like, I'm kind of dealing with, like, sometimes, like, as I've been working in, you know, like, I'm on the ALA committee for the GNCRT for the conference that's happening in San Diego. And then I hear all this conversation about, like, reluctant readers or people who don't like comics or think comics aren't reading. And it's like, wait, what planet is this from?
Yeah, right.
Are these the same people who don't like ice cream? What's wrong with them?
I mean, not to generalize, but what I'm seeing in the library.
You think it's lactose intolerance too?
No, I was going to say, I think it's like a generational thing that a lot of people who are older think of comics as like Sunday funny pages or superhero stories. And they haven't seen like the explosion of like graphic novels of like these full kind of narratives in one book. And you think of like Smile, the like slice of life kind of comics for children. So it's like realistic fiction chapter books, but now they're in a way that's colorful and engaging because they're also comics. Funny story from the other day, I had a patron come in who she was like, I haven't been in the library in years and stuff. It was like this whole thing. She wanted to get back into reading. It was actually very lovely. But she walks in and I'm just like, hey, can I help you guys with anything? And she's just like, yeah, where are your comic books? And I was like, for what age? And then she was like, oh, I was joking. And I was like, I wasn't.
That's weird.
Oh, wow.
Like, if you want comic books, I got comic books. But yeah, I think it's really this thing of like, of it feeling very separate from books and reading for certain generations because what they were exposed to is like a way shorter form of comics. But even superhero comics, if you even think of like the monthlies, I read a study somewhere that said in superhero comics, kids are exposed to more unique sight words than most chapter books at their like reading level, because you know, you think of these, you know, think of Marvel and DC with these big universes with all the, you know, why did I just totally blank on the fantasy metal? Captain America's shield is made out of it.
Oh,
vibranium. Okay.
Vibranium, right.
I was like, my brain was like unobtainium. And I was like, that's not the right one. That's not the right one. But so like things like that, it's like they're making up all these fantastic concepts. Kids are encountering all these words that they've never seen before because like they didn't exist before they were in this comic book.
I read a lot of X-Men and a lot of Marvel comics growing up too. So I totally get that. But I was like, I was reading everything I could get my hands on. Like the Sunday funnies, sure. But I was also reading like the newspaper and I was reading Marvel comics whenever I had enough money to buy Marvel comics. I would actually go through and the Scholastic book fairs would come to my school and I would just beg for as much money as my parents would give me and like figure out not what I wanted the most, but how I could shift my purchases to spend every single cent that I got given so I could come home with more books. Went to the library a lot to read as well. It was no surprise I didn't like sports. But yeah, I think that that's huge. I think it's so interesting to see the different approaches that publishers are taking to that now. So we're good at tangents on our podcast. Specifically, I think about Francoise Mouly's line, Toon Books, which is like a kid's book line that is now, I think Astra is distributing them now, but they've done a number of books. Jeff Smith's had a book there. Art Spiegelman's had a book there. Lots of amazing, amazing cartoonists have had books with Toon Books. And they actually work out ahead of time because it's for very young readers. It's pre-chapter book in a lot of cases. Lexile scores. And they're one of the only comic book publishers that I've heard of that tries to figure out Lexile scores for their intended age group and reworks the text so it matches the age group, which is, I think, a really interesting educational tack where it's like we're reading stuff that's exactly appropriate for that age. But if on the flip side, if you've got stuff that's super high interest for that same audience, they might want to learn what those words are that they don't know, especially if it's not it, especially for independent reading. Like, they might look it up. They've got Google. They could just look up any word, you know, even bad ones that they ever want to. So lots of different takes on that. But absolutely, I think getting kids interested in reading, I think in a lot of ways trumps literally almost anything else about the content. I mean, within reason. But yeah, I think that's something that I think we've really seen with manga too. Like the adherence of manga has just been people snatching it up because suddenly these stories are so energetic and so high action. But it's also, you get Rena Telgemeier and finally someone's like, oh, a story about having braces? That is so relatable. The pictures are there. It's so bright and interesting. And the cringing on her face, that's how I feel all the time. Like, kids can really project themselves into the illustrations. And yeah, I totally think that's something that a generation of readers missed. But Deb, you grew up reading comics too. We've talked a little bit about that. You grew up reading manga, like untranslated manga even, were always around your house.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Hawaii, and I'm Japanese-American, but I'm like third, fourth generation. So I didn't grow up speaking and reading Japanese around my house, but Hawaii has a huge Japanese-American population. So we had like three Japanese movie theaters. Three. And we had like a Japanese TV station and a Japanese radio station. And, you know, like you could watch stuff. I could watch anime all the time with subtitles. I could watch tokusatsu shows like Kikaida and Kamen Rider all the time. And then because I started getting manga magazines, because there were two Japanese bookstores in town. So my aunt introduced me to it. So I started reading manga that way. And then what was the beauty of manga is that even though I couldn't necessarily read all the words, I could understand the story. Like it was so addictive. It was like, when asked people like, what's the first manga you read? I usually say, what's your gateway drug? What's your manga gateway drug? You know, what was the thing that you read and it unlocked the door to you just being hooked on the stuff? And everybody has one who is into manga has one, but it just like, once you get it, you get bit hard. It's fun.
So besides reading, have either of you been watching anything interesting lately?
I actually just before this, I was trying to stay up and I needed to watch something really interesting. It's a little late here. And they just dropped a new, so it's a YouTuber pair called Colin and Samir, and they interview other content creators, mostly YouTubers, but in different formats. And I'm really interested in the idea of how people create things that are important to them in this year, 2024. I've been in comics, working professionally in comics for, let's say many years, decades at this point. And so I kind of get comics and I even get where comics are at now. But looking at how comics or looking at manga or looking at how these other creative disciplines interact with what, you know, I think the most prominent creative discipline right now is video content creation for things like TikTok for however long that lasts and YouTube and things like that. Seeing how they interact, seeing what the lessons are to learn. So anyway, Colin and Samir are these two dudes who interview these people to really dig into what makes their content work. And they just literally, right, like 2 hours ago, dropped a new video about Mr. Beast, where he, instead of sending out a press release, announced that he has signed a like insanely huge multi-million dollar deal with Amazon to do a new series for Amazon Prime, in addition to his YouTube. And so I'm watching this and they're getting into the business, they're getting into the creative freedom aspect, why he didn't sign earlier with somebody, why they take him seriously now. What is he still a content creator if he's actually the head of a 200 person company right now? Like these ideas about creativity fascinate me. So Colin Samir interview Mr. Beast or a candid talk with Mr. Beast. It just came out March 19th. Really good video. And it really gets into the notion of what happens when you're very successful at what you do and you're at the kind of the top of your game and you actually are like, no, there is further to go. And he sees what that next place is. And it's pretty amazing. It's inspiring in some ways. It is terrifying in others. If you're someone who makes things for a living, even if you don't really follow or even like what Mr. Beast is doing, there's so much in there that you can learn about what it takes to put content into the world in a way that it could be a career for you and what makes sense for you. He's done 3 videos with them. This is the 3rd one. This is the one with like the bombshell announcement. But yeah, that's the thing I watched recently, very, very recently, that I was like, oh, I could talk about that indefinitely if you want me to, but instead, I will pass the mic. Deb, has there been anything you've been watching and really enjoying?
I went to a dinner party last night and people were asking what I'm watching. And I said, it's been a long time since I've watched Occidental TV. So I've been addicted to A Clean Sweep, which is basically a reality show, variety show. It's on Netflix, but it's about retired Korean pro baseball players getting together like the superstar team. And then they're all retired, but they're basically pinned against the top high school and college teams. And you can see them really dealing with them being in their late 30s, early 40s, and that they can't quite do what they used to anymore. But all of a sudden, they're just, you know, a lot of them, they tell these stories about how when they retired, they were pretty burnt out. They were tired of the game. And they're now playing together. They rediscover this love of the game and the teamwork, the camaraderie they had with each other. And the way that it's edited is really entertaining and fun. Like, now I'm big fans of these KBO players. And I didn't even know about the KBO until I started watching this. So now it's... yeah, it is so much fun. I've watched like every episode of two seasons, and yeah, it's like if you like sports manga, but you wonder what it's like for older guys, go watch Clean Sweep. It is tons of fun. I guess the other thing I've been watching is the Delicious in Dungeon anime. That's totally fun.
I haven't started watching it yet.
I've been watching all the fan art that's been coming out about this series online after the anime. But if you've not read or watched Delicious in Dungeon, it's basically about a bunch of adventurers going into these dungeons to look for treasure. But they discover that when you're doing that, it's like camping, right? It's going for a long-term hike. When you're taking in all your food and supplies, one, it's heavy, and two, it's expensive. So they decide to start cooking what they kill in the dungeon. And it becomes like a combination of a fantasy adventure, like ensemble comedy, because the characters are just bounce off each other like Seinfeld characters. And then it's also cooking. So even though they're cooking slimes and like jewel bugs and basilisks, but you know, like that look like chickens but are actually snakes. Like you could actually take out the word dragon and put in the word steak. And you can actually make some of these recipes in the book. It's delightful.
There's a sentient screaming mushroom that's very funny in one of the early episodes. It's one of the first books we read in the podcast, and it's so fun. If you're like an old school D&D player, there is so much for you in this. It is so, so funny. It's on my list. And I've also been seeing some of the fan art, probably different fan art than you. It's fantastic.
Well, Senshi, probably.
I couldn't say.
Yeah. Senshi is the Borley dwarf.
He's the Gimli of the crew.
He's the one who brings the wok and the spices, and he's the one who teaches them how to cook stuff. It's so much fun.
It's a good one.
I'll have to check that out because I love D&D and I love food. So that sounds like it's hitting all of the points for me.
it's such a genius concept. You think to yourself, why didn't someone think of this before? I remember seeing it when it first came out in Japan. I thought, oh, someone's going to license this and make a bungload of money.
Yeah. Congratulations, DN Press. You won the award on that one. Good job.
You won the buttload of money.
Yeah. I hope you're making truckloads of money from this. But also what's interesting about A Delicious in Dungeon is that after the first three or four volumes, then it starts getting into this other subplot about one of the adventurer's sisters who got eaten by a dragon. And it becomes super compelling. It becomes more than just a cooking and D&D manga after that. So that will keep you reading. And I think it recently ended. It's like at 13 or 14 volumes. It's really fun.
I feel like it's something completely tonally different than all of that. I went and watched Dune Part 2 with my partner in the movie theater on Saturday. Narratively, they just picked up where they left off. It was just like we had to break this 6-hour movie into two parts because no one was going to watch a 6-hour movie. But it was, yeah, so it was just as visually stunning and interesting and compelling as Part 1. And that's coming from me, someone who hasn't read the books, and I don't know if I ever will, because just some of the stuff that my partner has read the books and some of the stuff he's told me about it, I'm just like, that seems too convoluted for me. I can't.
And we'll return to the show after a quick break.
A
Unleash your inner child and join us at the Auburn Branch every Friday at 4 p.m. for Color and Calm. There will be coloring books, mandalas, colored pencils and markers, as well as herbal and decaf teas and soothing music. No registration required. Decompress and head into the weekend refreshed. For questions, email auburn@cranstonlibrary.org. Want new books but don't want to leave your house? Borrow ebooks and audiobooks to read on your phone or tablet using the Libby app by Overdrive. You can even send and read your borrowed ebooks to your Kindle e-reader, U.S. only. To learn more, visit cranstonlibrary.org or overdrive.com/apps/Libby. All right, I want us to have enough time to talk about what you both came here to talk about. So I guess first we'll start off with, what is Mangasplaining?
Mangasplaining is a podcast for people who don't know that much about manga, but want to learn. And Deb and I and our colleague David Brothers, who's the other host of the podcast, all have worked in and around manga for a long time, have been fans of manga for most of our lives, I think for all of us at this point. But our buddy Chip Zdarsky, who, as I alluded to earlier, is a professional comic book writer, currently working on Batman for DC Comics, just finished up Daredevil for Marvel, but doing a really great couple of independent comics like Afterlift and Public Domain for Dark Horse and Image, respectively. Check those out. He had never read manga. He had a friend who was into manga and Japanese culture in high school, and he'd read the occasional thing and be like, oh, okay, I kind of get it. Like a Lone Wolf and Cub here or something like that. But talking to him, and he couldn't figure out like why I loved Japan so much, why I was keep going, why I was reading all this manga. And he's like, well, maybe we start a podcast about that, because it was the pandemic and Lord knows I wasn't doing well. And why not talk to my friends every week, and maybe we'll have a structured friend versation every week for Mangasplaining, where we, the three of us, get together and we explain manga to Chip and therefore the listener in the audience as well. Deb, I think, tries her hardest to pick the books that are most interesting and most new reader friendly, whereas David and I sort of tend to go off on our own personal quests sometimes. Maybe Deb can talk more about that.
Well, David is kind of a chaos master.
Yeah.
You know, like typically you would think that this podcast like this would only feature like your Criterion collection of manga, you know, the very best, the cream of the crop, the stuff that everyone agrees is deeply influential and very, very, very important with a capital I. David, on the other hand, likes to bring in books that he just personally likes, that he thinks is exciting or interesting or just plain weird. And what I love about that is he introduced me to books that normally I would have not even gotten past the cover. Mm. And then he'll lead me down this path, like Raw Hero, for example. Oh, my God.
Oh, he comes back to Raw Hero.
If you want a treat, go listen to the Raw Hero episode because it's hilarious. It's not safe for work, but it's hilarious.
Raw Hero is a sex comedy thriller about a guy who to earn money to like take care of his brothers that have been orphaned, needs to become a cross-dressing superhero, which is played totally inoffensively, actually, which is also a coup, and is absolutely incredible. It is the kind, it was the book I was most dreading when we were actually going to sit down and read it, and the book that I now like really think about the implications of this superhero universe that I have learned. And it's manga too, which is also pretty crazy, because I think, like Deb's saying, no one reads like that. No one sits down and is like, or maybe they do as like a project, but they're not going to be like, I am only going to read important books. Most people read books that catch their fancies. Most people have hobbies that they're embarrassed by, and they want to like dig deep into, or nerd things that they're, you know, out and proud about and dig into. And I think that we try and keep that tone with the podcast. Sometimes I just pick a favorite author. Sometimes I pick a book, and I'm not even ashamed of it, that I know people will listen to the episode for, so it'll boost our numbers a little bit. And sometimes I pick a book that is just like, man, everyone on the podcast is maybe not going to love this, but the fan that listens to us every week, this is going to be a book that they absolutely love, and it's gonna be the manga that they find. So I think that that's one of the things that's so successful. I love Deb, I love your picks because you actually really try to aggressively respond to the books that David and I pick. You're like, oh, two testosterone-laden awful books in a row that, you know, end up being pretty fun. Here is soft gay comedy romance. Here is, and yeah, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you've had some really good picks last season.
It's been a lot of fun. And I think one of the most delightful things about that makes, if I can be, you know, like braggy about it, is the real secret ingredient is Chip. Chip constantly surprises me about the books that he responds to. You know, like you would normally have this stereotype of a guy who writes mostly superhero stuff to only respond to stuff like One Punch Man or Naruto and whatever, right? No, some of his favorite books are Way of the House Husband, which is a rom-com about a yakuza who becomes a house husband. Another one is Even Though We're Adults, which is a really thoughtful grown-up love triangle between a woman, her husband, and the woman who catches her eye. It's a really thoughtful and simply drawn but emotionally complex story. So like, wow, Chip, you are a really you're not your superhero guy, you know, like he likes good storytelling. And I think that's what's been so much fun. And of course, another thing is that we're all friends. You know, I mean, we can be honest with each other. We can, you know, like say, I didn't get what you picked. Or like, I hated every second of this book. I didn't know what was going on. But usually by the end of this episode, we all kind of find, like, we kind of come around a little bit, like, even if we didn't love it, you know, kind of come around like, you know, but there's something to this book, or there's something that is worthwhile or makes it worth checking out for one reason or another.
I think the secret of manga-splaining is, and people don't, it's maybe a little different than when we started even, but there's, I'm going to be conservative and say there are 50 times more manga published in Japan every year than are translated into English every year. Maybe that number is higher. I actually really want to sit down and compare it at some point. And that's just the stuff that gets into book format, let alone stuff that's serialized in magazines that poor bastards never get a collection, a tankobon out of it, trade paperback out of it. And because of that, there's already been several layers of curation in terms of what we see in English. So the secret of manga explaining and manga in general is, unless something's really for a very specific niche audience, most manga is at least very readable. Might not be good, but man, is it a page turner. Man, you just pour through it and get to the end. And so Chip is someone who's just studied comics his whole life as a writer and as an illustrator and as a fan. And Deb and I and David picking the stuff that we think has a quality that sets it above even the stuff that's already been cherry-picked for us, he'll find something to like in most books. There's very few books, I think, that we just got to the end and he was like, nah, never again. He finished them all, though. I got to say, he's never not finished a book, which is really pretty amazing of him. But yeah, like, we're already...
Or at least he fakes it really well.
Yeah, if he's faking it, he's doing a good job. I didn't read one of the books, actually, because I ran out of time. Rose of Versailles, I actually only got 2/3 of the way in. I admitted this on the episode. This isn't news. But I was like, I told everybody, like, hey, this is an older book. It's from the 70s. It's a really important book, but you don't have to read the whole thing if you don't want to. And I was reading it, and I just got caught up. Life, you know how it is. You put a book down, except most people, when they put a book down, aren't then supposed to go and do a podcast episode on it, actually, like 2 days later. So I actually only got 2/3 of the way through at the time. I've actually subsequently finished it. And I was just like, yeah, I was shocked that he read it all, because he and David both going into it were a little bit like, it's going to be like French aristocracy and we're all going to like, they're all going to be about like horrible slights at balls. And it's like, oh, I can't believe she won't talk to such and such. Like, this is going to be terrible. And David, I think in particular, when we read Drunken Dream by Moto Hagio, when we read that one as well, he read that first short story and was like, if they're all like this, this might be the first book I don't read. But it turns out it was an anthology. There's lots of different stuff in it. It was good. But now they've been troopers. I like to think Deb and I have been troopers as well. Like, we all just respect each other's, like, even above and beyond being friends, even before we were friends, we were all writing online. And I actually just found the first email I ever sent to Deb like last month. It was about the Taiyo Matsumoto interview, actually, that she set me up with. And we ended up becoming really good friends because of that. So I owe Deb my soul. So that's really good for the podcast. Good for longevity anyway. So yeah. I think the podcast, the secret is that there are, you can jump into any episode, really. And especially because we're finding our feet with some of the first few episodes, I don't recommend starting at the beginning. Start with a manga that you already like have read, even if you liked it or didn't like it, and just get a feel for what our vibe is, or like you maybe are with this episode of the podcast, and then go from there. Because I think once you get what we're trying to do, it's a lot more fun to listen to us talk for just under an hour.
And we also do, like, Christopher and I, mostly Christopher writes very extensive show notes. So it's almost a book in itself. Like, if we mention something in passing, we do mention in the show notes that we give you more context. If you really feel intimidated by the world of manga, the combination of listening to the episodes and reading the show notes will give you a lot of context. And what we try to remember that, you know, people will come in at any time and may not be marinated in the world and terminology of manga, but we try to make it as accessible as we can. But, you know, people have pointed out to us that now Chip actually knows something about manga. He's no longer the ingenue, the innocent to manga. So maybe we need to bring in some people. But, you know, I don't know quite how to handle that because I like what we have now.
Yeah, the vibe's really good. Every once in a while, we'll do like a guest episode where, like I said, we interviewed Robin because we were on the ground at ALA last year. Or David's done some interviews that were really good with people that are making sort of North American manga. I think actually Ngozi Okazu, who did Bunt that you were talking about, is someone who loves manga. I think they would be a great podcast guest at some point. Like, there's any number of creators we could talk to.
Oh, Reina
actually would, I think we'll get her one day. We'll figure it out. Maybe one for day. The next book. Yeah.
We have to do the Barefoot Gen episode with Reina.
Yeah. I think she'd be super down to do that one. We actually just read Manga, the Frederick Schott nonfiction book we talked about, the history of manga, actually has 4 manga excerpts in it from different publishers. It's something that could never happen today because of how complicated manga publishing is in North America. And one of those chapters is the first chapter of Barefoot Gen, which is about the bombing in Hiroshima during World War II. And it's really powerful. But Reina Telgemeier has talked extensively about how that book was really important to her as was her gateway drug into manga, and realizing that you could tell a story that was autobiographical, you could tell a story that was from real events, and you could fictionalize yourself, so it didn't have to just be you. It could be a character who, you know, was essentially you. And she said she's learned a lot. She has actually a comic that she did about it that's really good, that we've put in the show notes a couple times. So yeah, there's everyone's got that one manga. I kind of want to get Jim Zub on to do Delicious in Dungeon because he did a little review of the anime, and I want him to read the manga because I think the manga is pretty fun. And, you know, more of our librarian friends. I can't even imagine what Bridget would want to talk about. Bridget Alverson, who's a great writer in the library space and the consumer space about manga. She writes for School Library Journal and Library Journal and ICB2. Yeah, she's amazing. So yeah, sorry, that's probably off track too.
No worries. So just one more time, do you want to plug where people can find out more about Mangasplaining?
Well, very simply, you can just go to www.mangasplaining.com, and that's where all our episodes are, as well as the show notes. You can also go to mangasplainingextra.com, which is our Substack newsletter site, which also has the podcast links and the show notes, but as an added bonus, also has our serialized manga and a couple of exclusive articles that are only posted there.
We're trying to do a really cool thing with the Substack where we actually serialize manga one chapter at a time, sort of like what you might find on the Shonen Jump site or what you might have found in Japan when it was coming out, to sort of build suspense, but also build awareness of these manga. Because, I mean, a lot of this stuff, especially single volume manga, it comes out and it's on the shelves for like 1 week before the next wave of 30 titles comes onto the shelves. So us sort of slowly teasing out a story, I think it's really helped develop the right audience for our books. So Okinawa was our first book, as I mentioned. It's available right now from Fantagraphics, Susumu Higa. It's on the ALA list if you need a link. Our next book is up for pre-order. It'll be out in late May or early June. It'll be actually an ALA debut. It's called Search and Destroy by Atsushi Kaneko. Our next book after that is actually going to be our first one from Udon, and it's called, oh, this is a cool one. We didn't even talk about this, Gigatown, Guide to Manga Symbols. And it's basically, you know, manga will have like, you know, the little spirals when people's eyes turn spiral, or the sweat drops, or the like plus on their, when they're angry. There's actually a book in Japan that is about those symbols and what they mean and how they've historically been used by an amazing mangaka called Kono Fumio. And she did this book, and the whole manga explains how these symbols came to be using characters from Japan's first manga from the 12th century, which is a scroll of like frolicking animals. And so it's like gentle comedy, 4-panel comic strips with additional text and quotes and things like that sort of open up this idea. So it's going to be a fun book for all ages, but also it's going to be a manga reference book. And as a librarian, you must know how rare those actually are. So we're really stoked about that. It's coming out, I believe, in September, but Udon might have preview copies available at ALA. They might have copies available at ALA. We're working on that. So that's pretty exciting. And then, yeah, that's what's up for pre-order and what's going to be coming soon for the publishing. But we've also published a lot of short stories for free and paid short stories on the Substack as well. So check it out, mangasplaining.substack.com or mangasplainingextra.com to check that out.
All right. Fantastic. We wrap up the show with a segment I call The Last Chapter, where we talk about a library or bookish-related question. So I've asked this question before, but I thought I would give it a little bit of a manga and anime twist, which is, what superpower from anime / manga would you like to have?
Ooh, wow. I've been thinking a lot about the villainous stories lately. A lot of these stories where people get go back to the past, and then they get to redo everything, their life again, but all with the knowledge of their current circumstances. But they don't do anything boring like buy lottery tickets and buy, you know, stock in Amazon. They like really try to do things differently, not be a doormat, maybe be nicer to people. You know, I guess as an older person, I find that to be a really pleasant fantasy, and I wish I could do that. But at the same time, high school was not fun, and I don't think I want to go back. I mean, if I could go back to high school, I would say I would leave Hawaii, go to London, and see The Clash live. That is my deepest regret, is missing that period of music and only admiring it from afar. That's it, though.
That's a pretty common trope, or to go live in another world or whatever. I don't know. I like so many aspects of my life right now that I don't know that I would want to leave it to go back and do something else for 40 years and hopefully not screw up meeting my husband and marrying him. So that's tough. I've always wanted to fly. I've always wanted to fly. I think from when I was a very, very young boy. And seeing that in manga never ceases to be thrilling, because it doesn't quite work in manga in the same way it works in superhero comics, where like, you know, Rogue or Superman can just like lift up off into the air and fly. Usually it's like really good jumps in manga. most people aren't like floating in the air. But either that or just to have more time, I think. I find there's not enough hours in the day to do all the cool stuff that I want to do. And that's, I could either give up stuff like playing video games or going for walks and just sit in front of the computer and keep pounding stuff out. But I did that for 15 years and I don't recommend it. So yeah, maybe more time, but maybe flying. Maybe that would just be a nice treat. How about you, Taylor? What would you pick from manga?
Because I've answered this generic superpower question before. I was trying to think of like how to make it more like manga and anime specific, but it's been so long since I watched this anime, I don't remember a lot of details about it. But I do remember I watched a certain scientific railgun. And finding the Esper power is very interesting, because it felt very scientific to me. Obviously, having superpowers is not anything that's scientific in our real world, but they made it feel very scientific with like the levels of your ability of powers and when your powers manifest and stuff. So I guess I always appreciate a hard magic system where it's like, these are the rules of the thing, and we know it and we're clear on it. When it's deep of like details of thinking how everything would play out, I appreciate that. So yeah, I guess I'll have to go back. I didn't have time before the show because I thought of it like right before we recorded. I was like, a certain scientific railgun. And then And then I was like, oh, I got to look up what the powers are. And then I'm like, oh, it's almost two. So I didn't get a chance to look it up. But they all were kind of like mind adjacent, I feel like, from what I remember. It was all kind of like, they could end in like edic, you know what I mean? Like telekinetic, like all those kind of powers. It's like you're using your mind to manipulate some type of thing in the known world. Hmm. So I remember that show being pretty cool.
I loved those science-based powers, like that kind of stuff, reading X-Men. Deb and I were both reading X-Men around the same time, and that was the same thing. I remember, you know, more than once trying to see if I could, you know, use the Force or use Jean Grey's telepathy to move something across the room. Did not work out, or did it? And I would never admit it on a podcast, right?
Because then it'd have to kill you.
Right? With my mind bullets.
All right. Well, thank you both for joining me. And thank you, everyone, for listening. If you would like to respond to our last chapter question, you can do that by emailing us at downtime@cranstonlibrary.org. You can also reach out to us via social media with the hashtag DowntimeCPL. If you're feeling generous, please rate and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, because it helps people find the show. Thank you again for listening. And this has been another episode of Downtime. Downtime is a project of the Cranston Public Library and is produced by Elena Rios, Robin Nizio, and me, Taylor Cardillo. Audio engineering by Dave Bartos. Our theme music is Day Trips by Ketza, and our ad music is Happy Ukulele by Scott Holmes. Links to the books and movies discussed can be found in the show notes. Remember to rate and review Downtime on Apple Podcasts, connect with the podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram with the hashtag DowntimeCPL, and if there's something you'd like to hear on the show, send an email to downtime@cranstonlibrary.org. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are the speaker's own and do not represent those of the Cranston Public Library. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. The Cranston Public Library name, in all forms and abbreviation, are the property of its owners, and its use does not imply endorsement or opposition to any specific organization, product, or service. The content of this episode is the property of the Cranston Public Library and may not be reproduced without express written permission. Join us next week for more Downtime.
Sorry about that. The cat was crawling all over the desk, so I was trying to minimize the disruptions from that.